So then when he dies, obviously, what are we going to do next for the company?
Yeah, that was a very difficult time. It was 1980. The boom was still on, as you may recall around here, and it stopped abruptly in 1982. I mean, they always say the milestones, Penn Square Bank, right around the 4th of July, 1982. And it was bad. It was bad. All of our customers were broke. The company was rolling along. It's hard to slow something down that's rolling along that hard. The subcontractors were all going broke. We had a very difficult time. The guys that were running the company made some bad decisions, too. It was so bad, like in 1985 or so, the only two significant projects in the city of Tulsa were those two shopping centers at 61st and Memorial. Fortunately, we had them both. Eaton Square and then the one on the south side. They don't look like anything particular right now, but in 1985, there wasn't anything else going on but them.
Those were the only projects?
Those were the only significant projects going on in town. It was so slow. Yeah. And so what happened for the companies that were in Oklahoma and Texas that were affected by the oil bust, you had to make a decision as to whether you go find some other places to work or you shrink. And a lot of people, including the blockheads running this company, decided they were going to go find some new places to work instead of shrink. A lot of companies did that. Many of them went broke. We came pretty close. We got down to where we had less than 800,000 working capital. They took a disastrous job up in Wichita. We never worked up in Wichita. It's cold up there. We got to do things to work through the winter up there that you don't have to do down here. They didn't know that. They took a job in Washington, D.C. on one of the most horrific sites around Tyson's Corner, the ones that the locals all put more money in the bid for because they knew the site had terrible drainage and access problems. Of course, our guys right off the turnip truck, yeah, we can go do that. Well, we lost a few million dollars there too. So the long and short of it, we got down to less than $800,000 in working capital. Timothy and I were just buying the company. I mean, I guess it worked well in the sense that we got it for a very good price in hindsight. But at the time, there wasn't much of a company to buy. So I immediately laid off half the company.
You bought that because it was an emotional buy, a family buy. You wouldn't have bought it otherwise.
No, I thought that we had a great name. It takes years to build that up. We had some really good people. We didn't have any money. The same good people that were making a lot of money in 78 through 82 were losing a lot of money in 82 through 84, but it wasn't any of their fault. It was the management that was too aggressive and was going in and taking risks in areas they didn't understand what they were doing. So I didn't think it'd be that big a deal to shrink the company up and regroup among a cadre of younger guys. Back then, we were all in our early 30s, me and the guys that stayed, laid off half the company. And we decided we were going to ride it out. We were going to ride it out where we worked, Oklahoma and Texas. Now, we did stay in D.C. and kept doing one or two projects at a time, having paid a few million dollars for the entry ticket and losses.
It was an interesting time here because you had Cal Burns, who assumed the presidency. He passes away in 1982 and was then succeeded by Don Jones, who died in 1984.
Yeah.
So leadership literally dies off. This is coming down to 84, a very pivotal year. That's then where you become the CEO.
Yeah, I became CEO when we bought it. Don was still president, but he died a couple of years later. It might have been 83 when I became president, when we were in the process of buying it. We didn't get it closed until 84. We have these pictures of the ancestors on the walls of some of the different offices like down here. And someone asked me one time, why don't you put a picture up? I said, you got to be dead to get your picture up.
And so you did assume the presidency then of Manhattan at a very critical time.
Yeah, it was critical. We had less than $800,000 of working capital, laid off half the company, laid off the older and expensive guys and kept the young guys, and we just regrouped and decided we were going to ride it out.
And then you expanded your operations in Oklahoma City, didn't you?
We did. We were fortunate to get some work for Baptist Hospital that gave us a chance to go to Oklahoma City and reopen the office there. We were also fortunate to get some work in Dallas a couple of years later. The first job we did, we went back into Dallas. You know, we'd been in there early in the 70s building a large part of DFW Airport and the Dallas Convention Center. And I got a chance to go back to Dallas for Gerald D. Hines, building a job that actually was Chili's, Norman Brinker's headquarters. And, of course, we had the office in Houston. Our first big break came when Williams Companies here built River Center Mall in San Antonio. They gave us our first big break, Williams Realty. We also built the two black buildings down where Samson Resources is for them.
In downtown Tulsa.
Right. Those were the jobs that let us get back on the map, both with customers and in the industry and financially as well.
And then you were on your way. In 1993, you were given the National Excellence in Construction Award, And there was a point, I'm sure you know, that never happened to us.
No, I never would have thought any of this would have happened. We just wanted to keep from going broke.
When you assumed the presidency, of course, you knew the company already.
Oh, yeah. I knew the people. I knew the business. And I'd done pretty much every job you
could do. So it wasn't like you were a new person walking in.
Right.
And then you began to, as you said, cut employees and all. Well, things turned around. The economic conditions of the country also helped you at that time?
Well, you know, Oklahoma and Texas worked through the oil bust. Like everything seems to get worked through by some time or another. Things started to gradually get a little better. St. Francis started to expand a little bit. St. John's, we got back into St. John's. Baptist was expanding. The airport started to have a little things coming. So gradually the economy got better
yeah.
in Oklahoma, and certainly in Houston it did. It bounced back real fast in Texas, Dallas and Houston.
Everybody sees his name, Manhattan Construction, and they don't know, unless they listen to this, there was a time you only had $800,000 in working capital, wondering, are we going to survive?
That's right.
Do you ever take any of these things to sleep at night? Do they keep you awake at night?
No.
You shut them off.
I never had any problem with that, any problem with stress or anything like that. We just had to do what we had to do, and hopefully, again, if you have good people and you're in a good place— Oklahoma is a great place to be because people are honest and work hard and always willing to give you a chance. You can make things work out if you don't just outrun your skis and take too much risk. Construction management sometimes become enamored with growth. What we always used to say around here is you can't eat volume. You can only eat profits. And sometimes when people don't own the company, it's a lot easier for them to want to build a monument and have a big $1 billion sales or something. When you own the company, it's like, we better just make a little profit here.
Other executives here, do you have to remind other people of that?
Sometimes. Right? We've had a few other bad patches where we've had a few bad jobs. We actually had some bad jobs while I was in Rome. That kind of got a little out of parameter, and we had to change some people out. It's really interesting, okay? Because I came in 84 with Don and the young guys, and we regrouped and built a new management team. Then I found that when I came back from Rome, around 2010, 11, digging into what had been going on, that many of the management team that had been in their 30s was now in their 60s, and some of them hadn't aged so well. Some of them had become more about them than the company, and it was time to make a few changes again, which we did. And we're about right now at the end of regrouping and rebuilding the second management team for the company to take it to the next level. And we've got our son here. We've got the other two kids in the business in D.C. We've got a new president of the building business, John Rahan, who actually lives in Atlanta, became from a competitor. We've replaced a few managers. We've had some people be promoted from within, which is great. So we have a whole new management team.
Then are they in their 40s, 50s?
Some of them are in their 50s. Some of them are in their 40s. And there's a few in their 30s.
After employees get to work so long, they begin to take ownership and there's an ego or there's something here that...
You've probably seen it too, John. People age differently, physically and mentally.
Right.
You know, I mean, you look at my idol, Walt Helmrich. The guy was so sharp and careful physically about what he ate, didn't drink. He read all the time, was so focused on current events. He was not going to let history run him down. He's kind of a model of people aging well, but not all people do. So we had some people here who really were thinking about retiring. Maybe they couldn't verbalize it, but I think they were maybe not looking to the future and as open to new ideas. You know, markets are always changing. Customers' interests or priorities are always changing, and so it's time for just a little bit of a spiritual tune-up around here.